नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 25, Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. Today we're reading text number 15, 16, and 17. We can do the first two in unison. That means all at the same time. And then we'll do the third one responsively. That means I go and then you go. So, apartvatyu vanam varsham ativatam shilamayam swayage vihite mabhir indro nashaya varshati. Sri Krishna said to himself, because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain, together with terrible winds and hail. Tatra prati vidin samyag atma yogena sadhaye lokesha manina maugyad dhanishe shri madam tamah. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Text 17, word meanings, na, not, he, certainly, sat-bhava, with the mode of goodness, Yuktanam, who are endowed, Suranam, of the demigods, Isha, as controlling lords, Vismaya, false identification, Mata, by me, Asatam, of the impure, Mana, of the false prestige, Bhanga, the eradication, Prashamaya, for relieving them, upakalpate is intended. Nahi sadbhava yuktanam suranam isha vismaya matto satam manabhanga Prashamayopakalpate Nahi sadbhava yuktanam Suranam isha vismaya Matto satam manabhanga Prashamayopakalpate Nahi sadbhava yuktanam Suranam isha vismaya Matto satam manabhanga Prashamayopakalpate Sadhava Yuktanam Suranam Isha Vismaya Matto Satamana Bhanga Purshamayo Pakalpate Nahi Sadhava Yuktanam Suraram Ishvishnu Mato Satam Mana Bhanga Vrishamayo Pakarpate Nahi Sudhava Yuktanam Suranam Isha Vishmaya Mato Satam Mana Bhanga Vrishamayo Pakarpate. Ladies, Nahi Sodhava Yuktanam Suranam Isha Vishmaya Translation. Since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. Purport. The demigods are supposed to be sudbhava yukta, endowed with spiritual existence, since they are deputed servants of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.24, it is stated, Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagna brahmanahutam brahmaiva tenagantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. That which is duly offered to the Lord becomes spiritualized. The demigods engage in the devotional service of the Lord by managing various departments of cosmic administration. Therefore, as demigods, or as servants of the Lord, their existence is pure, sudbhava. When the demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord and deviate from proper behavior, they are not acting as demigods, but rather as conditioned souls. Mana, or false prestige, is certainly an anxiety-ridden burden for the conditioned soul. A falsely proud person is not truly peaceful or satisfied because his understanding of himself is false and inflated. When a servant of the Lord becomes asat, or irreligious, the Lord saves him from impiety by breaking the false prestige that has led him to be offensive or sinful. As stated by the Lord Himself, Yasyaham Anugrinami Hadishye Tadhanam Shanai. I give my blessings to a person by taking away his so-called opulence. Of course, the advanced stage of devotional service to the Lord, as described by Rupa Goswami, is Yukta Vairagya, utilizing the opulence of this world to execute the Lord's mission. Obviously, the things of this world can be used wonderfully to spread the glories of God and to create a godly society, and a more advanced devotee will not be seduced by material paraphernalia, but will dutifully and honestly engage it solely for the pleasure of the Lord. In this particular case, Lord Indra forgot that he was a humble servant of God, and Lord Krishna therefore arranged to bring this bewildered demigod to his senses. Om Jnana Tivinandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We're getting a fuller picture here of the demigod's position. We have to remember that they're representatives of God. So they're in a very elevated position. They're actually doing devotional service. We often make the distinction, demigods are like this, devotees are like this. But they're also devotees. And to attain their positions, they've had to do a lot of pious work, a lot of service, devotional service, to attain the heavenly planets. In fact, it's explained in Bhagavad Gita that if you're not successful, you can go live in the heavenly planets for 10,000 years. If you're not successful in your Krishna consciousness, and then return and pick up where you left off, any practice of yoga. And that's just to live there, to be the king of the heavenly planets. Indra, of course, means king. But he's specifically Surendra. Surendra means he's the king of the suras. So all, you can say suras means all godly persons. A very exalted position. And from our perspective, of course, he's way above us. Bhuvar Swa, often in talking about the material world, even only these three levels are discussed. It's sort of like that's pretty much all we can comprehend up to heaven, because beyond that, things get way out there. So Bhuvar Swa, up to heaven. So it's very exalted post. But, of course, in comparison to Lord Brahma, it's nothing. There are 14 Indras. An Indra lasts, it's of course, it's a position. There's a particular, just like there's a sun god, and he has a particular name, Vivaswan. So there's an Indra, he has a particular name. The particular Indra who's ruling right now is named Purandar. So this Purandar Indra, there are 14 of the Indras like that in one day of Brahma. They rule for the duration of a manvantara, which is 71 Divya Yugas. So it's a pretty long time. But then you think from Indra's perspective, there are 14 of them in one of his days, just one day. So how many days in his life? That's how many Indras there are in the lifetime of Brahma. So Lord Brahma, of course, is extremely elevated. He's way above everyone else. But still, Indra is not an ordinary soul. Chaturatma Prabhu mentioned briefly yesterday something about from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Indra is mentioned toward the beginning of the book, the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Narada Muni is looking for the greatest recipients, the greatest recipient of Lord Krishna's mercy. So he starts with some Brahmin at Prayag, and then that Brahmin sends him to a king and who's ruling over a southern kingdom, which I guess means southern India. So he goes to this king. Of course, Reverend Narada Muni goes, and because he hears from the previous person how great this other devotee is. That, no, I'm not. I have no qualifications. And then the devotee lists all their disqualifications and faults and offenses and so on. And then sends Narada, and you should go to this person. You want to see someone who's really got Krishna's mercy, go to this person. So he goes to see, Narada goes to see this king in the southern kingdom, and he glorifies the king, and then the king, he refutes it and says, no, I'm just here on earth, an earthly king. What kind of mercy is that? People who live on earth, we die in a few moments. Our lives are so short and we have no opulence. The demigods, now they're the ones who got Krishna's mercy. And he lists all kinds of characteristics of the demigods, how they lived so long, so many other different qualities, and their ability to worship Krishna with so much opulence. And then he says, among them the king is Indra. And he really has Krishna's mercy. Because especially, Krishna has appeared as his brother, his younger brother, Upendra. Lord Vamanadeva. So just sometimes we forget this. At least I do. We hear all the bad things Indra does. Vamanadeva's his brother in the heavenly planet. So Narada Muni, of course, he goes wherever he wants to go. This is an amazing thing about this story. Whenever anybody says, go here, so Narada just goes there. Even he goes to out of this world into Vaikuntha and wherever he wants to go. Then he comes back and just travels around. Incidentally, I came across a verse that mentions Narada Muni, and it says that Narada has a bright white complexion with red hair. So if you see anybody like that carrying a veena, you'll probably be able to recognize him. He's what you'd call a cool dude, I would think. Huh? Bright white with red hair. Of course, he's always in ecstasy, so his hair is always going out, too. So Narada is traveling around. So he goes to see Upendra. He goes to see Indra, rather. And when he sees Indra, what's Indra doing? He's sitting there, and Vamanadeva is there, giving his darshan. And Indra's offering his prayers. He serves him. He's right there. He's got God living in his house, basically. So he's able to serve him personally. What a position he's in. And he also goes into ecstasy. Back to this morning in the reading after Mangalarti, there was that Prabhupada quoted in his purport, that Narada Muni Bhajai Veena song. So there it said, was it Sahasranane Paramasukhe Hari Hari Boli Gai? So Indra is mentioned in that song also. Shiva is there, Brahma is there, and Indra is also mentioned. Sahasranana means he has 1,000 eyes. That's another thing I tend to forget about Indra. He's got eyes all over his body. So when he goes into ecstasy and starts crying, practically a flood, he has so much tears coming from all of his eyes. So he does. He's worshiping Vamanadeva, and he's in ecstasy. But then Vamanadeva, of course, he's the independent Supreme Lord, so at some point he just gets up and walks away, goes into his private quarters with Kirti Devi. And yeah, his consort is called Kirti Devi. So Narada's witnessing all of this. So after Vamanadeva, this is all described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. After Vamanadeva leaves, then Indra welcomes Narada. He didn't want to break his meditation or didn't want to offend Vamanadeva by focusing on Narada. But then he receives Narada. And Narada, as he always does when he meets the next devotee, starts glorifying him. Oh, you're so fortunate. You get the mercy of Darshan, you get to worship Lord Vamanadeva. So then Indra, he starts saying all these bad things about himself. One of the things he mentioned was the Govardhan Leela, how he blew it. And there's a purport there. It says that Indra, of course, these purports in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopi Paranadana Prabhu has basically taken Sanatana Goswami. They're 99% just directly from Sanatana Goswami, who wrote his own commentary. So he describes there that Indra gets bewildered about what Krishna, because he's God. Krishna is God. Vamanadeva is God. So he does things that bewilder even the great devotees. Can't figure out what he's doing all the time. So one thing that really bewilders Indra is that Vamanadeva comes as Krishna, and he associates with these mortals, ordinary mortals. These people are just, you know, cast off. They're nothing. They live in the low rent section of the lower planets. So it bewilders him, because this is part of his pride, of course. He's Indra, king of heaven. He has so much opulence. Anything he wants. One of the opulences of Indra, of course, he has the Parijata flower there. So the Parijata is a kind of wish-fulfilling tree. Of course, we know another thing that Indra did. He did get upset when Krishna came and took his Parijata, one of his Parijata plants. He didn't like that very much. But this Parijata plant tree, it fulfills your desires, a wish-fulfilling tree. And it said one of the ways it fulfills desires, it's like if you want music and song and dance and merrymaking and partying, It'll supply all the paraphernalia and the people and everything. It'll give you the dancing girls and the whatever you want. Full party store. Every Parijata tree. It says one flower can fulfill all of your desires for however much you want to enjoy there. So that's one of the opulences that he has. Whatever he wants to enjoy, that's available to him. But so he becomes proud, but it bewilders him that Krishna's associating with these cowherd folks in this world. He doesn't understand why Krishna would come to the earth planet, move around among these people. So Indra, he sends Narada on to Brahma. He says, if you want to see someone who really got the mercy of Krishna, go to see Lord Brahma. So he goes to see Brahma, and we hear about Lord Brahma, what's going on there, which of course is incredible. Brahma worships the Mahapurusha directly. Indra worships Vamanadev. Brahma worships the Mahapurusha, thousand-headed Mahapurusha. So what an experience that must be. So his very exalted position. So in any case, Lord Indra, he gets proud of his, and he forgets. That's what it says here. He forgets that he's a devotee. That sentence was quite interesting here. When demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord and deviate from proper behavior, they are not acting as demigods, but rather as conditioned souls. So it's an interesting distinction here. As if demigods aren't conditioned souls. We tend to think of demigods as conditioned souls. But if they're performing their service to Krishna, then they're not. Just like any devotee, iha yasya hared bhasye karmana manasa gira nikila swapyavastasu jivan mukta su uchite. When you're engaged in the service of Krishna, then you're considered to be a liberated soul. So the demigods are also liberated when they're doing their service to Krishna. They're not ordinary souls. So this is another perspective that I never really thought about. It's nicely brought out here. They have their service to do for Krishna, and very responsible service. That's one reason they have a lot of opulence. Of course, what is the heavenly planets, besides demigods who control things, they're just people who just live there. Indra has a job to do, but others, they're just there to enjoy. So Indra's job is to facilitate this. It's all part of the structure, Krishna's whole plan for how the universe works. You have this place where you enjoy the results of your piety. So Indra is there to oversee all of this. That's his service. And I suppose maybe there's more to it, but that's at least part of his service to Krishna. As I was hearing this, I was thinking there's so much parallels our position also. We're also given responsible positions. In fact, what is the whole essence of the Bhagavatam, you can say, is to convince us of the extreme fortune of anyone who's gets the adhikar, the privilege of devotional service. We're praying to Tulsi Maharani for the privilege of devotional service. Because there's nothing greater than that. To be able to serve Krishna, not anyone can do that. Because he's God, who can serve God. So we have been given that privilege, at least in some sense, under the guidance and protection and order of the spiritual master, to engage in Krishna's service. We have such a responsible position. And we're also given things, we're given opulence sometimes to do that. Perform our service. Actually, anything we're given, we have to recognize that's coming from Krishna. Whatever we do, it requires some material. Just like in philosophy, there are the different causes of anything that we do. The efficient cause, and one of the causes of anything you do is called the material cause. If you're going to do something, if you cause something to happen, you needed some material to make it happen. So that comes from Krishna. And of course, the more responsible your position is, just like Prabhupada gives the analogy, he says human beings, they have more responsibility than animals And because of that, they're given more opulence, especially in the form of higher intelligence, that opulence. So because we have that higher opulence, we have more responsibility. So we have a responsibility. We're given, all of us are given responsibility. The spiritual master has given us responsibility to engage in Krishna's service in one way or other, to serve Krishna. But if we become puffed up and forget, then, of course, we can lose everything. Punar Mushika Bhava, that story, become a mouse. Prabhupada was telling this story one time, and the devotee started laughing. Prabhupada said, no, this is serious. Yes, it is serious. If you again become a mouse, and you're elevated to the position of a tiger, then you again become a mouse. Oh. Or Indra. And we have that other story of Indra. He's always getting into trouble with how he became a pig, and then he didn't want to leave the pig's life. He said, oh, no, I love it here. I get my slop every day, and I got my little piggy kids and my piggy wife. And what's not to love? Society, friendship, and love. So he becomes bewildered by his opulence, whether it's pig opulence. From Indra's perspective, we have pig opulence, and pig-like opulence, what we're enjoying here. I remember hearing a long time ago this apocryphal story. Prabhupada, I heard that in 22nd Avenue, some devotee had a picture of a woman. I think she was a singer or something, Indian singer maybe. And he had it in his locker or something, and the devotees were looking at it, and Prabhupada saw it. So, I mean, you can take this, if it was true or not, I don't know, but this is a story I heard. And devotees were thinking, oh, she's very beautiful. And Prabhupada looked at it and said, she looks like a horse. So maybe from Indra's point of view, all the beautiful women of this world, they probably look like horses. So his opulence is so great. So he becomes proud. But we also become proud of our opulence. And we become attached to it. In this purport, it's quoted this, yasyaham anugrinami hadishye taddanam shanayam. Sometimes it holds us back, our attachments. Prabhupada, he says that he was attached to, he was trying to make money, of course. Now we understand that he was doing it as service to Krishna, but still he was attached to the idea that he should make money. I was just reading recently, there's this book, I don't know if you've seen it, it's called Shower of Compassion. The BBT produced it, and it's a collection of Srila Prabhupada's poetry. It has Adore Dori, the Day, that's that English one. But it has all his Bengali poetry and translated. Very nice book. And it has nice the drawings by this, what's her name? Anuradha? Is that her name? Yeah, she does beautiful drawings of Prabhupada, captures him so nicely. So, what was the point I was going to make? I was going to quote one of those prayers in that book. Anyway. Oh, Prabhupada is talking about his giving everything up. You know, there's that one song, Vrindavan Bhajan. He says, I'm sitting alone in Vrindavan Dham and I'm getting so many realizations. I have my friend, my family, but it's just a list of names. All that's left to them is a list of names. He says something like, they're gone and it's a tragedy, but I laugh. I sit here and I laugh. So, Prabhupada is... But he says, I know what it was, in that same book, at the end of it, there's Prabhupada's... He wrote a prayer to Bhakti Pragyana Kishwa Maharaj when he passed away. He got the notice. There's a tape of this. It's very... I think I mentioned it recently. You can hear the devotees signing. You can hear they're writing on a podium or something, signing this letter of condolence that Prabhupada wrote. The story is that Prabhupada had just given a lecture. This was in Seattle, 1968. He'd given the Bhagavad Gita class, and he had already left, and the devotees were still sort of there. They had taken some their hot milk, and they were still kind of getting ready for bed. And then Prabhupada came back in, and he said, I just got a letter saying to my godbrother who gave me sannyas, Bhakti Pragyana Kishwa Maharaj has just passed away. So I've written one prayer in a letter of condolence. So he read the four sloka verse, and he said, I want you all to sign this. And he gave a little talk there. He got all choked up at one point, talking about his godbrother. He said, my spiritual master actually made me take sannyas. Through this godbrother of mine, he made me take sannyas. And in that talk, Prabhupada said, I had vowed that I would not take sannyas. It's the first time I'd heard that. Maybe I'd heard it before because I'd heard this tape before, but I read it. Wow, that's pretty heavy. Prabhupada had vowed that he wouldn't take sannyas, he says there. So, but then he says, of course, what he would, Prabhupada, of course, quoted. In fact, it was his godbrother, Bhakti Pragyana Keshava Maharaj, who Prabhupada, I think, would discuss with him this verse. Said, maybe this is what Krishna is doing to me. Yasya hamanu grinami hadishe tadanam shanai. If someone is too attached materially, then I take away everything. Because Prabhupada was just, you know, or Prabhupada, all of his business ventures were unsuccessful, they were one after the other. So he was discussing with his godbrother. And his godbrother, isn't Lila Amrita is described, that his godbrother said, yes, this may be what is happening. Krishna is taking away your opulence. This verse, by the way, yasya hamana gunami hadishye tadvanam shanai, it comes from the 10th canto, chapter 88. Chapter 88 is called, I forget what it is. It's the story of Lord Shiva and Vrikasura. Vrikasura is the one who had the benediction that whosoever head that he touched, he received from Lord Shiva. If he touched someone's head, their head would fall off. And of course, he chased Lord Shiva all around, and then Lord Vishnu tricked him. So the context of that story is at the beginning of the chapter. The previous chapter is prayers by the personified Vedas, which is, it's interesting how that all unfolds too at the beginning of the chapter. But in any case, at the end, or in the beginning of the next chapter, of course, that whole chapter is about prayers to Lord Hari, Lord Vishnu. In fact, I'll just mention one thing. This chapter is recited by Sanandana Kumar, one of the four Kumaras, in the company of Narayana Rishi at Kalapagram, where he stays in the Himalayas. So Sanandana Kumar, the question was asked, how do the Vedas, which deal with the three modes of material nature, deliver knowledge of transcendence? So this question actually, Parikshit asked it, and Narada Muni went to Kalapagram, and he heard the answer from... So Sanandana Goswami was deputed to answer the question, or Sanandana Kumar. So when he answered, he said, I heard this from the personified Vedas. And then that whole chapter, prayers by the personified Vedas, is Sanandana Kumar reciting what he heard there. So all these slokas, which there's lots of them, I don't know how many there are, but they're pretty long, and they're also long verses, he had it all memorized, everything that the personified Vedas said to Lord Vishnu. So this is all glorification of Lord Vishnu. So at the beginning of the next chapter, Parikshit Maharaj says, Lord Vishnu is so great, and he's so opulent. We hear about so much of his opulence in the previous chapter, prayers by the personified Vedas. But why is it the Vaishnavas are so poor? And Lord, and of course, his consort is Sri, the goddess of fortune. But his Vaishnavas are often so poor. And Lord Shiva's followers, Lord Shiva himself, he lives under a tree with naked, with nothing. And his followers, they have opulence. So what's going on here? Why is it like this? So that's answered in the next chapter, and this verse comes in the context of that. Actually, the basic answer about Shukadeva Goswami says about Lord Shiva, he says that Lord Shiva, of course, first of all, his consort is the material energy itself. So, but Lord Shiva gives material opulence. And one thing that we learn about Lord Shiva in the context of that is that in the creation, Lord Shiva is in charge of manifests the false ego, ahankar. And the ahankar has three major divisions, which is ahankar in goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then under that are the 16 primary creative elements. Whenever we hear about the creation, we always hear about these 16 things. In fact, when Vishnu creates, then Brahma takes over. What Brahma has is these 16 things. So what are these 16 things? They're the 10 senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the mind, so that's 11, and then the five Mahabhuta, or earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So those are the 16, the 10 senses, the five material elements, and the mind. So Lord Shiva, he also manifests in all of these things, and he gives opulences according to these different things in Linga Sharir, Linga, we all know the Shiva Linga. So these lingas are actually designated according to these different, just like there's a Shiva Linga for the air, Vayu Linga, there's a Shiva Linga for fire, Jyotir Linga. In fact, you can look on the internet and you can find out, I think in India there are 12 famous Jyotir Lingas. So if you want to visit them, you can find out where they are, these Jyotir Lingas. So those who worship the Jyotir Linga, they get the opulence that's provided, that the fire can provide, whatever that is, I don't know. I'm sure there's a whole science of Shiva Tattva, they have their own books. So Lord Shiva, these are all material, the opulences that come from these 16 elements. So that's what Lord Shiva is able to give his followers. But Lord Hari, he says, why should I give my followers these material things? I give them transcendence. That's what he's not interested in material benedictions. He gives them Vadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. He gives them transcendental knowledge. That's why he says, and Chukadeva Goswami, when he's speaking this, he says that King Yudhishthir, after an Ashwamedha Yajna, I was thinking King Yudhishthir, Ashwamedha Yajna, now I'm thinking Rajasuya Yajna, but Ashwamedha Yajna, is that the same thing, or is that another sacrifice? In any case, Shukadeva Goswami says that after Yudhishthir performed the Ashwamedha Yajna and Krishna was there, he asked Krishna the same thing. Why is it that your devotees are often tend to be poor and Lord Shiva's are rich? So, Lord, then Krishna said, Yasyaham anugrinami harisyadhanam shanaya. I favor my devotees by taking away their material opulence because then they get rejected, as the verse goes on to say. Dukkha dukkitam, a person starts suffering, and Prabhupada says it's swajana dukkha dukkitam, his swajan, the people who are around him, friends and relatives, they say, wow, this person doesn't have any money, we reject you, not interested in you anymore. So then the person has to take shelter of Krishna, the attachments are broken. So Krishna says, this is my special favor. Or Prabhupada would sometimes say, Krishna's first installment of mercy is to take away everything. Harisye tadanam shanai. Actually, the word says shanai, gradually. Krishna takes away everything gradually. At death, it's all taken. But as we get old, we start seeing how things start being taken away. Our life energy is taken away from us. So he's called Hari because he takes away. But ultimately, of course, he takes away our conditioning. He takes away our maya. He takes away our attachments. Takes away our illusions, and he gives us his lotus feet. That's his mercy. So here we're seeing a graphic example. Indra is going to learn, of course, as often happens, sometimes we learn our lesson, but then we forget in the material world. But at least when later, when he's talking to Narada Muni, he says, I learned something important here in this pastime. Krishna corrected me, and I got back on the right track. So Krishna does this to his devotees because he takes personal care, takes personal attention of his devotees to bring them back to him. Okay, I thought this class was going to end about 15 minutes ago, but let's see. Let me just read the last verse. Since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. So the demigods, or at least Indras, in this translation, they're said to be endowed with goodness and then bereft of goodness. So in other words, he's naturally endowed, but sometimes they give it up. They get carried away by their opulence and forget. So, any questions or comments? Yes,
I was just curious about going to the heavenly planets. How do we avoid going there? Do we make an official?
The more advanced you are, the less chance you have. And Prabhupada said, if one is more advanced, then one comes back immediately, takes a birth in the family of devotees. So that's what we're shooting for. We don't want to go. Prabhupada would say like that too. Just imagine, Kali Yuga is progressing. So if you go for 10,000 years and you come back 10,000 years from now, what's Kali Yuga going to be like? So we don't want that to happen. So we want to come right back if we have to go and take birth in the family, take birth in ISKCON again.
If there are how many Indras in the Day of Brahma? 14?
14, yeah.
So the Bhagavatam is full of stories of one Indra or many Indras?
Yeah, many. It seems like most, not everything, of course, but much of what we hear is in the context of sort of our current time span, you might say. So the Indra that we hear about, unless it's specifically pointed out, my understanding is that we're talking about the current Indra, Purandar, the different pastimes that we hear, for example. In fact, I don't know if Indra always has all these eyes, if he always does what he did to get those, so probably not. So the Indra we hear about is Sahasranana Purandar Indra.
Yeah.
Well, the Vedas aren't forever, but the Bhagavatam has many incarnations, you might say. Bhagavatam is Krishna, it appears, and, you know, Krishna spoke four verses, that was the Bhagavatam, spoke to Lord Brahma. And the Bhagavatam, it said in Brahma Loka, the Bhagavatam is millions of verses. So the Bhagavatam literally just means anything about Krishna is Bhagavatam. So Krishna has unlimited incarnations. So the Bhagavatam is, you know, all the katha about all these incarnations. It says that Ananta Shesha, he's been chanting the glories of the Lord since the beginning of the time. He never, with his unlimited mouth, he never comes to the end of it. So the Bhagavatam is actually unlimited. So according to our time and place in the history, we're getting Bhagavatam, but we're getting, you know, what is necessary for us, what's suitable for us. And even if that's expanded, what Prabhupada's purports are also, of course, Bhagavatam. Just like I always thought it was interesting in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that in one moment, Lord Chaitanya performed innumerable pastimes, something like that. You go, what? How can I? He's like, you can only do one thing at a time, and in a moment, what can you do? But they're infinite. Everything Krishna, that's how, help us understand, these things are inconceivable. They go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So the Bhagavatam is like that also. It's infinitely deep. It's Krishna. Every word is Krishna. So it's infinite. Madhumatiku?
What I have a hard time understanding, like in the beginning of your class you mentioned that Indra, you know, there are great souls here. Vamandev is his brother. Then you hear him getting bewildered, just like Lord Brahma, understanding, now how could this little boy be da 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 da? And my question is, are they not aware of Krishna's pastime as him being an eternal cowherd boy in Goloka Vrindavan? Or, I mean, I'm thinking, God, if I get bewildered, but I would make kind of mistakes, but of course I would know that Krishna is a cowherd boy. And So how do we understand that?
I don't know. One thing, as you were talking, I was thinking, well, one thing to say is that we might say that he's absorbed in his rasa with Vamanadeva. So he's seeing Vamanadeva. This is God for him, Vamanadeva. He's absorbed in that. So in one sense, you might say he's not thinking that, you know, Vamanadev is an incarnation of Krishna. Vamanadev is God. So that's his rasa with Krishna at this point. So it's like he doesn't have to, not that he doesn't have to, but it's like everything is, Krishna is everything for him, or Vamanadev is everything for him. Now how much they know, I mean, I always think this too, if we have to take birth again, especially if you go to higher planets, you think, well, I already learned so much about Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, aren't I going to take that with me when I go? If I have to go to the heavenly planets, isn't that knowledge still going to be there? That, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I've always wondered just this whole idea of how we cycle, because lots of places probably call it a Ferris wheel. So always up and down, up and down. Kabu Swarage Utai, Kabu Narage Dubai, Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Sometimes you go up the Swarga, sometimes you go down, like the dunking stool. That's the example. So if we're always going around, you'd think, gee, it seems like we would have learned things, but it seems like the nature of the material energy is they just forget. You get covered over for a time, and that's just part of the arrangement of things.
Well, I personally feel satisfied, I think, to think about that actually is absorbed in Krishna as Vamandeva. I mean, that's where, I guess, his conception of his bhava or his... And then I guess the question came in my mind, who is Lord Brahma? Is it Vishnu that he is his worshipable?
Yeah, it's a form of Vishnu, Mahapurusha.
Mahapurusha. Yeah. Thank you. To ask Lord Krishna to appear,
yeah.
And at when Devaki was in the prison, they all came and the officer, they know Krishna was taking some. So they know Krishna
She's
was appearing.
Talking with her hand.
So they were aware that Krishna was appearing, you know, and
yeah.
Then they, you know, the different pastimes they were involved in. So it seems like, you know, momentarily they've forgotten.
Yeah, even Indra, it seems like he recognized that was Krishna, at least later. In fact, when he's talking to Narada Muni, his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he says, one of the things he says is, you think I'm worshiping Vamanadeva, but he doesn't care about me. He just goes whatever he feels like. He just leaves. He goes to the earth. Or he goes to, I found out there's another, we hear about different Vaikuntha planets. For example, Dhruva's planet is a Vaikuntha planet. And then there's the Vaikuntha planet in the ocean of milk that the demigods, they go to the shore and they pray to Vishnu. But there's actually another Vaikuntha planet above Brahmaloka, which is called, I'm forgetting what it's called. Rama, as in Rama Devi. So there's another Vaikuntha planet. So he says sometimes he goes there. So he knows, Indra knows about these things, that Vamanadeva is the same Lord who's on these different planets. But you know, somehow Krishna, maybe that was just part of the Leela that he had to become covered over. We always have this aspect of Leela which kind of enters into things. We don't always know. It's this Krishna just doing this because Krishna can do anything if he wants to. He's completely independent.
I think one of the things that Narada Muni heard was Indra was able to see Krishna anytime he wanted to. There wasn't no one of his.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
He could meet him anytime and see him anytime too.
Yeah, that's what Indra, he refutes all these things. This king said so many things about Indra, so many of his opulences, and then one by one Indra says, well, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, and he gives different reasons for it. So that was one of them. He always had Bahman's association. He says, he doesn't care about me. He just goes whenever he feels like it.
Actually, I had the same point. I just was going to read this translation from the prayers by the demigods. And there the translation says, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada, Devala, Vyas and by other demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna invisibly approached the room of Devaki, where they all joined in offering their respectful obeisances mm-hmm. and prayers to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can bestow blessings upon everyone.
Yeah, so Indra was there when the demigods offered prayers to Krishna within the womb. But somehow he fell asleep at the wheel there. Fell asleep at the chakra.
Is Brahmaloka a heavenly planet?
Well, depends what you call heaven. Heaven, you can say, is Swarga, so it's above the heavenly planets. And sometimes we just throw it all in. Everybody, anything above us, we can say, is a heavenly planet in one sense. But it's not the heavenly planets in the sense of you perform pious ritual, piety, karma, pious karma, good works. Then you go to heaven and you enjoy there for 10,000 years and you come back. That's Swarga Loka. But Brahma Loka, actually if you look in the fifth canto, you'll see that Brahmaloka is way, 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 way above. After Swargaloka, you have Swa, was it Bhugavar Swa, then Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, then Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. And it's way up there. So we see, just from this perspective, that the Manus, a Manu lives for a reign of Manu. That's their lifespan. So in Indra also. But there are 14 of those in one day of Brahma. What a short lifespan you take it. Not even an hour of Brahma's time. That's how long they live. So the difference between Brahma and what we call demigods, of course, he's a demigod. Brahma's a demigod in one sense. But he's so far exalted. He's sort of practically God, almost. Of course, he is a Purusha avatar. He is an avatar of Krishna. Raguna avatar, rather. Excuse me. So, and we can say it's a heavenly planet, but in one sense, it's really not. Just like we say demigods, we kind of think of demigods as anybody who's up there. The demigods are really the controllers, and those who are just residing on the heavenly planets. In one sense, they're not exactly what you might call demigods. They're just residents of the heavenly planets. But these terms are a little fluid. They're not always used in a very specific way.
I've heard this is Brahma is actually who the Christians may be worshiping as God.
Yeah, the creator. That's true. In fact, I think, the Mormons or the Mormons? It's so you can get your own universe, basically. So you can become Brahma, basically. And at least that's their idea. That's their goal.
One more.
Become Brahma. Who'd want that headache and run the whole universe? Especially if you have four heads. Four headaches, one thing.
One more thing. So you cannot be Vaishnav in the heavenly planets? You cannot make advancement?
Well, it seems like you could. We always get the picture that they're too busy enjoying. Even one problem, just like Brihaspati, he's the guru of the demigods. And I think, Narada goes everywhere. This is something I've always wondered about. You travel all over the universe, and by chance you might meet a guru. And I think, what about when you're in heaven? Doesn't Narada Muni go there once you get a chance to meet him? But apparently, maybe he goes to a different neighborhood or something. You don't get to see him. So, yes, technically speaking, even in hell, you can make spiritual advancement. But the picture we get usually is that they don't think about that. They're too busy doing other things. Just like this idea, Krishna says, I take away their opulence. That's for us on earth. So what to speak in heaven? They're just completely absorbed. And you have a tree that can give you anything you want. So that's all you're doing, basically. You're enjoying. That's why you're there. You perform this karma to get there. So when you're there, it's like, don't bother me. Hare Krishna, stay down there. I'm here enjoying now. That's the move, you can say. So theoretically, Narada can go there and help out. Of course, sometimes his help is different, just like he cursed the Nalakuva and Manigriva. They were there enjoying. He was there. They offended him. So what did he do for their reformation? He sent him down to earth. Of course, he sent him down to Krishna's pastime, which is kind of nice. So we don't really hear too much about it. But of course, at the same time, they are Vaishnavas because they're worshipping Vamanadeva, they're worshipping the Lord. They're Vaishnavas. Those in the heavenly planets are Vaishnavas. But they're not thinking so much Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. They're not thinking about pure devotional service and pure surrender. They're attached. That seems to be their flaw. They're attached to these opulences and material, the good life of the material planet, heavenly planet.
I was listening to Deva Prabhupada yesterday, and Prabhupada was saying when Krishna went to ask Dhritarashtra to return the property to the Pandavas, he said, I know you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I know this is wrong what I'm doing, but I don't have the ability to.
Yeah, I was just reading last night, actually, Krishna sent a Krura to go see Dhritarashtra. Yes. Krishna sent a Krura, and exactly the same thing happened. Krura spent some time in Hastinapur, and he preached to Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra said, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I'm too attached.
Yeah, he said, I'm so attached, even though I understand the complete situation. Yeah. I know this war is going to be bad and everything. So sometimes I guess the desire makes us so overwhelmed that we can't do what Krishna wants.
Yeah, Prabhupada says something like, Dhritarashtra said, your instruction does not stay in my heart. I can't take it to heart, in other words, because I'm just too attached.
We also can use ourselves as a reference on these points. Different times when we're thinking about doing service or doing something like that, or I know this, I know that, but there's still some reluctancy because of...
So, we're done. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.